It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why I think we should technically call it vivisection, because the subjects are still technically alive. But regardless, I graduate on Monday, and then I start getting paid for it, so that's pretty cool.
Well, you've got a stronger constitution than I've got, that's all I can say. But I suppose that's why you're going to be making the big bucks.
Yep. But don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. When are you going to start the podcast?
I have not thought this through. All right, you guys don't tell anybody either. Hello.
That'll work.
Everyone, welcome. You scared me. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where the producer sneaks up on us while we're starting. I ordered food, by the way. Don't try and cook nothing.
What?
I ordered food. Don't try and cook nothing.
No, Mama needs a snack.
Oh.
This podcast sponsored by Snack Factory Pretzel Chips. When the producer needs a snack, snack, what does she turn to?
Snack Factory Pretzel Chips are really good. We do like them. We were introduced to them at her mother's house.
They are not paying for this podcast.
No, like Kraft Dinner, we're just doing this for the lulz. But they are tasty. For those of you just joining us, we don't normally have an unpaid sponsor pretzel chip. Here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, cool folks like yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. That manifest physically within the hat itself. It's soon to be evacuating servants. We're not going anywhere, but I needed the E word. I guess if I have to start it with three others, it's probably not so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, we draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. And be prepared for a lot of this tonight. Hopefully that didn't kill anyone.
Okay.
I have been super sick. Today was my first full day back at work.
And he's Tony.
So, and I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 313, but you probably already know. I mean, everybody already sees the numbered episode before they listen.
Probably. Sometimes I wonder, because I know for me, when I was into podcasts more, once I had subscribed to them in iTunes, it's not like I ever looked at anything.
Mm.
So, I sometimes wonder who bothers to read the stuff on the blog.
This is the last podcast of our sixth year, so that means next week will be our first podcast of our seventh year.
Oh, boy. Wait. It will?
Yeah. Yes. You know,
I thought we started on the 17th.
We did, but the podcast will be on the 16th. I mean, you know, so that's the...
Oh, in
enough.
Terms of number of episodes.
Like number of weeks, yeah.
Based on date, technically.
Yeah, technically our anniversary is always on the 17th. It's always on St. Patrick's Day. But in terms of number of episodes, you know, 52 in a year or whatever, this is our last for our sixth year, and next week will be our first for our seventh year.
Goodness.
Every year that goes by, it seems you get more and more.
I'm just amazed. There's only two things in my life I have committed to successfully.
Your marriage and this.
Yes.
as you always say.
And I get the marriage bit.
I don't know what
I don't really get why I don't like the podcast. But if I got to pick what my other thing was out of all the things I have attempted to commit to in my life, this would probably not be the one.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be on maybe a top 20 or so.
Oh, wow, that's generous.
But, yeah, it would be beat out by a lot of things that would have produced revenue. I mean, right there.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's how it goes.
Apparently my self-discipline doesn't have any self-discipline.
Mm.
So just spontaneously.
Mm.
Arbitrarily. Which means I lucked out pretty well on the marriage thing. Like,
yeah.
Might have not been it.
Sure.
It might have been like this podcast and making the perfect ham and Swiss, you know? Like.
Sure.
Oh, I should start on that. I think I'd be good at that.
Yeah, you probably would.
The bread is the key issue. You gotta find the right bread.
That's the key?
That's what I think now, based on no experience. Mm. That's what my expertise is telling me. Because everybody can get ham, Swiss cheese, you know. I mean, not that they don't matter, but. All right, which do you think is going to go, the podcast or my marriage? If I really get into this, which is going to break first?
I think we both know the answer to that question. So it's been nice knowing you.
All right. So how's your week been?
Well, it's been all right. We've pre-ordered Andromeda.
Oh, yeah.
And to sort of keep us distracted before it comes out on the 21st, we realized there were a few DSL things for Dragon Age that we didn't finish or didn't even start.
Oh, really? Which ones? Because there's three of them. There was an extra area that they created.
We didn't.
And then there was sort of a whole extra campaign before the end of the game. And then there's a whole thing that happens after the end.
Yeah. The thing you were just talking about that sort of ends the game, we didn't finish that. And then there were like two things after that that we didn't even do. So I think that there's only a couple weeks till Andromeda comes out. So I'm not sure we're even going to finish what we're starting, but at least it's something to do until the game comes out.
Being sick, I have put a lot of time into that game.
And we also caught up on Legion.
Oh, we are not caught up, because there was one like last night.
Mm-hmm.
We are not caught up on that, but we're the rest of the way. I don't think I've talked to you since you actually decided to watch it.
No.
So?
It's...
Now, just for perspective, did you ever watch Fargo?
No.
Okay. Because it's the same guy, and you can tell if you've watched both of them.
I feel like I don't think it's giving anything away to say that there's...
Careful.
I don't think it's giving anything away to say that there's a... Right up front, right at the beginning, there's a lot of attention paid to mental illness.
Yes.
And how
I could argue it is the theme of the show. And how
one deals with it and how society deals with it. When I was a young sociologist at the University of Iowa, it was very popular in introductory sociology courses for professors to talk about sick roles, where there are certain cultural behaviors that are expected of people who are sick. And it, regardless of what they're sick with, even. What I think this show does a very good job of doing is showing how some of those roles manifest in mental health. Like, there are expectations on our character for how he should behave, how much of his agency he should give up to doctors and others because he can't rely on his own perception of things. And so I find that all very interesting. And it really carries the show for a long time. However, I noticed when those interesting things, mental health type of issues, which are done very well, extremely well in my opinion, when those aren't carrying the show and there are moments where there has to be good dialogue or good character development or a good interaction between characters, it doesn't work until you get back to those mental health issues that make it interesting. And it makes me wonder, okay, well, the trajectory of the of the show seems to be to move away from some of that mental health, not all of it, but a lot of that mental health stuff. And so as the show progresses, the dialogue and the characterizations and all that, it's is going to have to take more weight and bear more of the load of the story, and I'm just not sure it's going to be able to do it. The acting is good,
mm-hmm.
But there are moments where the dialogue is just doesn't work. It falls really flat, and I'm not sure if that's just...
Now that you say it, I can think of a couple moments like that, but overarching the whole show for me is this idea that we have absolutely no idea what's real and what's not, to the degree that if at any point it suddenly turned out that literally every single thing we'd seen so far was like a dream or something, it would not be out of place in this show.
That's
like,
right.
It is that, and Trish and I frequently play the game of that character. Do you think that character is real? And then something will happen that, like, proves one way or the other, and we're like, oh, shoot, you know, like, I won $5.
And there have been moments where it's not just, plotting also, there's really not much to plot in the earlier episodes.
Yeah.
But as soon as some plot elements become important, they sometimes seem to be very weak. Now, there are sometimes that happens, and you learn later that nothing was going, was real there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't matter that, in fact, it's part of it that the plot was stupid, yeah, or whatever. But I'm
and
just
that's the
not
thing.
Sure.
There's some dialogue bits that I'm like, this might be supposed to sound weird.
Or stilted, or not quite right, yeah. I just don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see how the show goes. But
I am so excited for what this has the potential to do to Aubrey Plaza's career.
Yeah, it's really giving her something to do that's
and
different than she's done before.
Because that's the thing. She's been typecast from day one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always liked her, but it's always been sort of hard to tell. And this is like a dream role.
Yeah,
like,
she's doing really well.
You could just chew the crap out of the scenery on this.
But I after watching 5 episodes, I looked the character up to see, well, what's going on with this character?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the idea of the comic character... First of all, I as I'm watching this show, there are sometimes I feel like this is something someone had a great idea for a feature film, and then they decided, oh, this could be a show, and then they decided, oh, I could shoehorn this into some Marvel property, and that's how I could get this show made. Because a lot of times it's like this doesn't have to be Marvel.
Yeah, no, and I
all about
still
movies
feel
at all.
Like they're gonna change. I feel like they're not going to adhere to the comic. From the little research I did before watching it,
yeah,
I already would be surprised to see if they managed to get it to follow that
story. Yeah, I mean, if they made this and it had no connection with Marvel, you would not watch it and go, gosh, this seems like it's based on some Marvel property.
No, if they hadn't told us. Even,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. In fact, they almost always have to sort of say something, and it almost seems a little awkward.
Well,
and
the
whole
Legion logo has the X for that exact reason.
So, but I went ahead and I like the general idea of what they're doing. I mean, in one of my stories, I talked about how paranormal phenomena could just be a manifestation of someone who's got psychic powers, but they don't believe they have psychic powers. And I know I'm not the first person to think of that. I'm sure there's been fiction based on that before. But they're doing it really well, and it's very interesting. But I looked up the character, just in Wiki or whatever, and read a little bit about it. And I actually liked the idea of that character even better. Although, the more I read, the more it looked like Marvel didn't utilize that idea the best way. Like they took a good idea and they pretty much destroyed it.
No,
and it's not very good.
And we're getting inside baseball, so we probably shouldn't do this too much longer. But also, that plot line in the Marvel comics was kind of cliched for, like, that kind of thing had already happened.
Yeah, 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 times. Yeah, yeah.
So I was a little disappointed when I saw how that worked. But yeah, now we're going into not spoiling things that don't spoil things that don't spoil things. So it's probably not super useful.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, I shouldn't. Those are my feelings about it.
Yeah, I'm just super excited, and it's very, Gene Smart does a wonderful job, and it's hilarious because the last time I saw Gene Smart do such a wonderful job was in season 2 of Fargo. Same guy. So apparently he's just taking Gene Smart with him. And as somebody who adored designing women when I was younger, it's so fun to see her doing like such different. In Fargo, she's the wife of a German immigrant, basically rural mob family, and like has to be the matriarch of that. So she's getting into some really meaty roles now. We are also watching The Young Pope.
Oh, yeah.
We are 3 episodes into that. What the fuck? It's just insane. Like, I can't tell you if I like it or I don't. It's just weird.
Mm.
What if today, in this life, like right here, modern human Earth times, a dude who looks like Jude Law but was a priest became the Pope and was kind of crazy and jerky? That's the show.
That's the show. What if?
Yeah. He becomes Pope, and nobody really thought he was going to become Pope, but he did. And now he's like a fucking nut job.
How did he become Pope then?
That's a question, actually.
Oh, that's a question.
He became Pope because the conclave voted for him. But how that came about is a thing, and that's part of one of the interesting. One of the characters in the show, I'm like, I know that guy is a really good liar, because I have heard him tell the story of how that happened to 2 different people. He told the exact opposite story to each of them, and I have no idea which one is true.
Mm.
It's all sorts of weird intrigue, and like everyone in the upper levels of the Catholic Church sort of doesn't believe in God. Except for a few of them that do, and it's just weird machinations, but it's all just from this one crazy dude who's Pope now. And what the hell does that even mean? And it's nuts. It's a weird-ass show. And, what's the actor? I always think of him as Prince Philip, ever since he did that in The Queen. Cromwell. What's the actor? Somebody Cromwell.
I don't know.
Well, somebody Cromwell plays one of the priests in it. Diane Keaton has an amazing role in it. It's weird. I'm glad it very much seems like it's a one and done kind of thing, like there won't be a season 2.
Mm.
And I think I'm glad for that. I don't know that this would hold out longer, but right now I'm just like, it's actually similar to Legion in that I just don't know what's going on. And it's freaky. And it's basically the papal state as psychodrama. Weird as hell.
Hmm.
And there's a kangaroo. It's weird. So yeah, we're watching that. I'm about 80 hours into Dragon Age. I've been playing it because there was nothing else to do while I was sick, so I'm getting a little tired of it right now. I had to break things off with Blackwell. Like, hard.
Yeah, you told me.
No, but I hadn't done it before. And I mean, like, literally at the end, like I didn't break it off early because I couldn't, apparently.
Mm.
I'm trying to get in good with Sarah,
mm-hmm.
and at a certain point I finally admit to it, and she's like, I'm not willing to share, and you've already got a thing with Blackwall. So I go on his little quest to tell me why we can't be together, which, by the way, didn't come up during the quest, so what the hell. But I find that nothing I do stops the romance at this point. Like, there's no option to just be like, fuck you, or let's just be friends, or any of that. And so it ends up with him, like, sneaking into my room, which is already weird, because I'm, like, 60 feet up from everyone else, so I don't know how that worked. And he, like, kissed me and stuff, and then he's like, you know, I need you to end this, because we can't be together, and it came down to literally the button of start the romance or not. And I picked the fuck you one, because at that point I'm like, oh my god, I'm so tired of your shit. I'm so tired of this. Oh, we can't be together, but I'm not strong enough to break it up. No. I'm like, see, what you don't know about this Inquisitor female Qunari mercenary is that she was once a 20-something male at a liberal arts college, and he pulled this kind of bullshit, but he grew up and he knows what kind of bullshit that is. So fuck you. So that's over, and we're still working on Sarah. We're not, like, in love yet, but we're having a fun time making shitty cookies and sit-down roofs.
Pride cookies.
Yes. She's such a weird northern British accent. It's just really weird. I think that's mostly it, because I've just been sitting at home sick. I have now watched every Crack After Hours video.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah, nicely done. Crackulator. Oh, the newest people watching?
Mm-hmm.
Not only did I not like it, I was borderline offended by it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Use of the word scientific.
Yeah.
I am like, no, it is not. A video that said, death is scientifically bullshit. And I watched that video, and that's what they say. They are wrong about the definition of scientifically.
They're wrong about so many things in that video.
I understand what they were going for, but it really just came off as trite and saccharine. And
yeah.
Which is too bad, because I really love the other one.
Part of it might have been how they titled it, so they set
that
it up
also,
badly.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, it seemed pretty clear that they wanted you to understand that it was this person's perspective, and it wasn't... You probably weren't supposed to think that
which is true, she
was being perfectly
stuff,
rational but. About it. And it had an interesting end. You know, the way it ended was interesting.
I'll put it this way. It made me like Candy the stripper less as a person. And that's saying something.
Well, it's just... I mean, I think it... I don't know why people sometimes say this stuff about death. Like, well, you know, you've got all this... It violates the laws of thermodynamics because nothing is created or destroyed. Like, they don't really understand how anything works.
Yes. Hey. There you go. All right. Trey's food's here. Thank you.
Well, like for example, one thing she said was, when someone dies, you know, all of everything they did and all this is destroyed, right, as they die. That's not true. All this, that stuff's still out there. The memories of people about them are still out there.
And from a measurable perspective, everything you're talking about in terms of the life, the soul, is electrical impulses. And we can track what happens to those.
Yeah. And so what happens when I turn off a light? Does that violate the laws of thermodynamics that the light goes out?
Because the lamp ceases to exist.
I mean, that's absurd.
No, absolutely.
It was just so absurd, everything
she
was saying.
Especially, I'm really on this atheist high right now. In that, it's still not me trying to talk other people into it. But I'm really getting into the idea of, like, if there is no such thing as deity or anything like that, then this is just a supreme example of probability, and like the odds of everything having come down to the society and the world that we have now, and like, is amazing to me, and that fills me with wonder, dread. And so then I'm like, oh, but what? No, I'm like, no, we are such a weird, chaotic mix that just happened to work out in this awesome way.
Yeah,
and that's super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also means who knows what awesome new thing we could turn into next.
Yeah, that's true too.
But yeah, I think I was disappointed because I was so in love with the first two videos.
Well, I thought they did such a good job. It was very...
both of them. I mean, it was harder for me. All dating stuff I have a hard time related to because I've basically never dated.
Yeah.
But I mean, insofar as, you know, media has taught me what it means to date, I was like, yeah, I really like that. All right, so that was all of that. We should do some things with a hat somewhere.
I think another problem with it is that in the first ones, the goal seemed to be to get people thinking about and talking about certain things.
Yes.
But this one seemed to actually want to sell you a particular idea rather than open up a conversation about it. Is that what it seemed like to you?
Absolutely. Well, and you're not wrong, because just from a structural point of view, that's what it was.
Yeah.
All the others were... a montage of dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one was a soliloquy with occasional interruptions of, oh yeah? And then what?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a little kind of weird. Anyway, Coffee wants to know. What is it that you love? Did your most recent actions express this love?
I love bacon and cheese, and I ordered myself a bacon cheeseburger, so yes.
I love our listeners, and I drew something out of the hat, so yes.
That's always tricky. Because, I mean, I'm not always thinking in terms of, let's go with the big one, my wife, when I'm doing things, including things that directly impact her. I do a lot, but I don't always. When you take from the perspective that I love myself, I think most of my actions back that up, but it also depends on what you mean by love. If I love myself, so I let myself get that extra large piece of cheesecake because it tastes really good, versus I love myself, so I don't let myself eat that piece of cheesecake because I know that my health is in trouble if I eat like that too much. I'm not sure which counts. But I'm sure there are also times where I don't think of myself when I'm doing something, and to my detriment in some cases.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty standard, I mean, for everybody, you know, like, I think it's generally true. If you care about something, love something, it kind of goes with the territory that it's going to have a huge impact on how you behave, but it's not an automatic thing, it's not like a reflex, you know, you have to think about it, and if anything ever interrupts that thought process, fear, tiredness, laziness, anger, whatever, then you're going to do something that doesn't quite fit in with that scheme, and, you know, usually you'll feel pretty bad about it right away, but, you know, other times you won't, and then you're on a path to perhaps ending your relationship with that thing or person. But that's all pretty basic, I guess.
I have often told Trish, in my attempts to express how much I care for her, that I love her more than anyone in the world except myself. And this sounds really douchey when I say that, but I'm saying it in the same sense that I say I'm racist. Like, I'm not saying this is a good thing. It's something I would love not to be true. But just when I look at my life and myself, I totally love myself first. I'm always thinking myself first. And I try really hard to stop that. But I don't feel like I should be in denial about it. Because you give me a black and white case, like the easy one, of course, is somebody needs to die, you or Trish, no problem. Or even anything like that, you know, somebody's going to have this wonderful thing and somebody's not or whatever. Yeah, I'll pick her. But in the day-to-day, am I always doing that? No. Like, if I'm picking a place we're going to eat, sometimes I'll consider what she wants, but very rarely I'm like, I'm going to go to this place that I really don't like, because I know she does. No, it still has to be a place I like, you know?
You know, you were saying that there's no point denying that you don't have this problem. You certainly aren't going to fix it if you deny it.
Also true.
I mean, denying it's not going to get you any closer to correcting it if you really think it's a problem.
But I think it is a constant self-correction. I don't think it's something that can go away. Same with my racism, sadly. Hell, same with my homophobia, even though I self-identify as queer. Some things that they were built in there too early, and all you can do is acknowledge them and course correct.
Yep, that's right. Yep, that's right.
So, I mean, I do try and do that. But it also becomes a thing of... It gets weird. And in general, I would say different kinds of love, not different amounts of love. But realistically, if you're talking about, you know, your spouse or stuffed crust pizza, you might love them both. But you're going to love one more than the other. So... if the two come into conflict, if my wife and stuffed crust pizza are having a fight, which has happened a couple times,
yeah,
logic dictates I should side with my wife over stuffed crust pizza. But my love for stuffed crust pizza isn't any less real, and I presumably should act in accord with the love I feel for stuffed crust pizza when it doesn't conflict with my love for my wife. But then, like, what if certain things then will never get any love, even though you love them?
Because they're
constantly...
Oh, because they're constantly in conflict with one another?
Yes, with things that win out.
Hmm. Well, I think a lot of couples experience that, or think they do, anyway. It's kind of common for... you hear this all the time, two people get together in an amorous relationship, and certain of their friends on one side or the other or both, they stop interacting with those people because the partner doesn't like that person or doesn't get along with that person.
Or even sometimes, I've heard a lot of cases where just the person becomes more engrossed in their new relationship and doesn't consciously cut off the old friend, but that sort of ends up what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I know people who have said that about me, and people have said that about Trish. That, like, once we got together, their friendship sort of drifted.
Well, I mean,
Addie loves that crumpled piece of paper. He thinks he can hide, and no one can see him underneath it.
Relationships do require resources, time, materials.
Podcasting equipment.
Yeah, and there are just so many resources.
Yep.
So, it is going to... I mean, while sometimes I think friendships suffer when amorous relationships form, I think sometimes that's perfectly unnecessary, and sometimes due to things that aren't very healthy, even in the most ideal circumstances, friends of these two people are probably going to see them less. Going to get less of their attention. I mean, that's just going to happen, probably.
8% of my heart, like Square One TV said.
What?
Haven't talked about this before.
Yes.
The 8% aren't, because they already gave away 92% before she came along.
Mm.
And knowing that a particular person or relationship or type of pizza crust is something you love, and maybe is something you love more than anything else, is not the same as saying that is the only thing you love.
Right.
And it would be weird to treat it that way. It would be odd if I directed all of my actions with the priority of how do they best serve/express my love for my wife. I think that would get creepy. I think she'd like that.
I think a lot of times we prioritize and quantify love in ways that are kind of bizarre when you really think about it. Like, it's not like it's something that you can measure with a scale or...
Love's also such a nebulous word. As I get older, sure. I'm discovering more and more. I'm like, that's not a helpful word. That's like thingy.
But
it's just not that useful.
But also, it seems like our culture expects us to prioritize these things to a greater extent than we really should have to. The toxic romance narrative of our culture totally encourages people to find...
Now, wait. Are you saying the toxic romance narrative or the toxic romance narrative?
The narrative is toxic.
All right, the romance narrative. Yeah. So it's toxic romance narrative. Right. All right. It's not a narrative about toxic romance.
No.
Okay. Because we also have those.
Yes, we do have those also. But
sometimes the line blurs.
Even our so-called normal or the approved... the romance narrative that everyone's always pushing on people that they think is good and right and pure is toxic.
Mm.
And in one particular way it's toxic is it encourages the two people in that relationship to rely on one another for literally everything, which is insane because that's impossible. Nobody is going to be able to be everything you absolutely need from a person. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
But that's something that is often, to the extent that you have these plot lines where a person has to choose between saving the world and saving this person, what that comes down to is, well, you are my world. So everyone else can just, and you're supposed, that's supposed to melt your heart when they think something like that. But it's so bizarre and unrealistic.
Also, if I was that person, I'd be really mad.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked about that. It's like, what? You're going to, now I have to live with this for the rest of my life that you sacrificed the whole planet for me? That doesn't make any, sense. But yeah, yeah, that's a thing.
Which is not the same thing as when Axe Cop left Super Axe and his wife at the beginning of time so that they could breed a whole race of good people.
Okay.
Like, they were the only two people at that point, but it was different.
It was a different
world. Yeah, the world wasn't gone. This was fixing.
Did it fix it?
I guess so. Because when he went back to regular time, like, things were normal.
Oh, okay, so that's good.
It's hard to check on continuity with XCOM for just so many reasons. Just all of the reasons. Yeah. No, that was an episode where XCOM ran into Super Axe's old college roommate, and they both majored in axe throwing at the same time and stuff, but Super Axe is like, he got a real job now, and he has a wife and kids and that kind of thing. So, and Axe Cop was very confused and bothered by this concept. Neuroduck is texting me during the podcast. Shh, quiet, Neuroduck, I'm podcasting. She won't hear that now, but
she'll hear it later.
Later, and she'll be like, oh, that's what he was doing when he texted, when I texted him. But in answer to your text, yes, I did.
Okay. Now she'll have to listen to know.
Right?
No, she won't. You'll tell her.
No, I'll tell her you got to listen to my podcast right now. I will absolutely do that. I am definitely that flavor of asshole, without a doubt.
And you won't even tell her how far into the podcast it was?
She listens to the whole thing, or at least she supposedly does.
Oh, now we'll see.
Yeah.
For sure. We'll see if she loves us and if her actions follow her sentiments.
Oh, this could be a very interesting one for us. This is from Jazz. What is a difficult part of world building when writing a story?
Difficult part. Well, for me,
putting your fingers on the home keys.
I don't know if there's one difficult part or if there's the specific difficult thing is knowing there's so much about the world you're building that you yourself do not know.
Yeah.
And you might not know that you need to be paying attention to a particular aspect of your world until you're going along the narrative and you run into it and go, oh, I didn't even think of this.
Absolutely.
And then the danger there is that when you start thinking about it, it's connected to so many other things, you have to shift all kinds of things, and before you know it, oh, crap, I've got to go clear back to the beginning and practically start over because I didn't think of that.
I hate to put it this way because I'm not, I mean, I guess I kind of am, but I'm not. You're writing a story that doesn't exist in itself yet. You're still drafting it, and you're suddenly like, well, shit, if they had time turners, they could fix everything.
That's right. And my whole story relies on these things.
Exactly.
So either I stop writing my story, or I put in some rules, can't seem arbitrary, and then you really have to think about it.
I've had a lot of those.
Yeah.
Because I, for some reason, and this was true when I was GMing as well, sometimes I start with concepts, but frequently it's a set piece. I picture an image or a scene in my head, and I'm like, that's awesome. I'm going to write a thing about that. And from there, I have to build the mythology around it. And then only after that do I build the narrative that ties all that shit together, which can be very difficult when you've already done your set pieces and your mythology without even thinking about the story.
Yeah, right. And then I suppose...
So we're like, okay, now some shit has to happen to get us from set piece to set piece.
Right, and then the worst thing that happens in a situation like that is you go to play the game, and the players come up with a response to what you've set up for them that completely short-circuits everything you've built, goes right around it, and then you're like, oh, I guess I needed this piece, or else they weren't going to be compelled to go into the place I intended for them to go.
To be honest, as a GM, I would have loved for that to happen. It doesn't happen very much. What happens with me is I figure out where a story is going to go. Not necessarily the end, but like what I consider a very big point in the story down the road. Then I figure out how we're going to start the story, and then we start playing the game. And then I'm like, it is too soon to go to that thing at
the end. Yeah.
So I have to kill time, basically. Almost all of my campaigns are like this. I'm like, okay, we set up the opening. Now I'm just sort of coming up with things to keep them busy until I feel enough time has passed that they have earned this thing. And it's a terrible idea. And to an extent, I'm doing it in my novel writing as well. Like, right now, I'm at a part... And I know where I'm going to end up, but in between, I'm guessing and just sort of pulling shit out of my ass. I'm finally starting to get a couple of pieces, fortunately.
One of the things that... Now, I'm creating a whole alternate reality that diverges from our reality in 1832. So I have to think about, you know, who were the presidents between here and there?
Yep.
What political parties formed? How did the Civil War work into it?
Oh yeah, I'm not fucking around with time.
And so, and in that situation, so here I am in this. The story takes place 200 years, so it's 200 years of alternate reality.
Yeah.
That's another thing. So you're in 2032, and your characters are just doing stuff, and you think, okay, I've figured out the world they live in, and one thing that I run into a lot is in the dialogue. When, if I was writing a character in contemporary whatever, they would say this. But as I'm writing it, I realize, no.
And then linguistic changes because of you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or that's an idiom that's from World War II. They wouldn't say that because we don't have World War II.
Oh, there's, idioms kill you.
There's stuff like that. Or they'll be doing their thing, and it's time to go purchase something, and I suddenly realize I didn't think about how they would use money or if they, that's huge. That's a huge thing to forget. So then you have to sit there and study money and where it came from and how it worked and how were things in 1832 and would they have stayed that way or been different? And of course, there's technology. So are they going to use cash or cashless? Are they going to use and if they don't use cash, is it, how are they going to secure their transactions? I mean, you have to think about all of these little things, and it's so easy to miss them until you're writing the story and you realize, oh crap, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that's awful.
Actually, it's kind of fun. I enjoy it. I mean, in sometimes it'll waylay you, and you're like, oh, crap. But figuring it all out is kind of fun. And, it hasn't caused too many destructive things to the story itself, but it's been kind of enjoyable.
That's why I prefer making whole alternate worlds instead, because then I can just build whatever I want. But I do a lot of loophole clearing later. Like, I'm building stuff, and I'm like, oh, but if they can do that, then there would never be a need for this. So, okay, we have to change. They can't do that. They sort of do this instead.
Yeah, I run into that, too, a lot, where when I was outlining it earlier, this happened, but now I realize, well, they wouldn't do that because of this.
Yeah.
So if I want them to do that, I have to change this, or I have to change what they're going to do. And so... Yeah, I think it's kind of tricky.
Especially in the narrative, that can get down to such weird detail. I recently had a spot in my rewrite where I basically just moved a conversation from one chapter to another.
Mm, yep, right.
Sure. But because of other things that happened, that completely threw it off. And so I had to go back and rewrite other chapters to make it work with this chapter where this was. A whole bunch of things were thrown off because I'm like, well, okay, in this version, they didn't know this at that point because they hadn't had that conversation. And then this, and also, I wrote this earlier, which totally contradicts this part if you put it here.
I've had situations.
And they would never have asked that question because it was already answered two chapters ago.
Yeah, I've had situations where I realized that a certain conversation that was had late in the story would logically have been had a lot earlier.
Yeah.
So then I go, okay, well, this conversation would have happened here, but wait, that means this conversation would have happened here. And by the time I'm done, a whole later chapter isn't even needed anymore. Yeah. Okay.
As somebody who reads a lot of books in genre fiction, I'm running into a lot of things. I'm working really hard to work against things that annoy me in genre stories.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I'm like, oh, they do that because it makes this part way easier.
Yeah.
A lot of it is the, why wouldn't you have asked that earlier? And so I come up with random excuses. That's how you do it. That's why Raymond Chandler's right. Just have somebody walk in with a gun. It's like, oh, they were literally just about to ask.
And distracted completely.
And we haven't had time since then.
Yeah.
So, I've been pulling that shit a lot. I will say that there's a give and a take with GMing versus writing. With the writing, I like that I have control. When I sit down again the next time to write more, it hasn't changed on me. When I'm gaming, like, they'll do shit that forces me to change the story to match up, or is taking it in a direction that I wasn't even fleshing out. Now I have to change that with the player. So I have a lot more control. Downside is I don't have that constant creative input of the players trying to do stuff. Because there are a lot of times when players come up with stuff and I'm like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Well, there's another downside too, and that is while you're gaming, there can be little problems and inconsistencies that just go right away. I mean, you move right on to the next thing and nobody pays attention to it or cares. Yeah. But when you're writing it, you got to pay attention to all that stuff.
Every show on sci-fi is decent only if you think of it as a retelling of a role-playing.
Right.
And if I read it in a novel, I would be pissed.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So many sci-fi shows like that.
But that record of, you know, all of your iterations of the story makes it, it's really challenging. You can't let it go like in GMing. You've got to sit and think about it and work on it and work it out. But I've told a lot of stories. I think world building can be challenging to the extent that I find myself when I'm really excited about telling a story that's in a universe that someone else has already built.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I have to admit that. Some of the stories I get most excited about are for established characters, or, you know, like when I read The Wizard of Oz stuff, I immediately started thinking how cool it would be to tell certain Oz stories. But part of that coolness is I don't have to make up all of this stuff myself. I can just sort of riff off of what's already there. And that makes it pretty easy.
Speaking of, we didn't even talk about the end of Emerald City.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. What I really hated is I absolutely see what season 2 is going to be.
Oh.
And I do not want that.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Oh, that show fucking pissed me off. Such a bad show.
I still feel like there were, you know, not earth-shattering ideas, but good ideas. Good enough that it could have been a better show. But I don't know how.
Definitely could have been a better show.
I don't know why. What went wrong?
I don't know, but it was a base-level thing. Like, it was a fundamental screenwriting or directing issue. It wasn't even.
It feels like
because like I said before, scene to scene, they couldn't keep their shit together.
It seems like an editing thing. It seems like
it could be.
I mean,
there.
I could easily believe that the script was there and the shots were there, but somehow in the editing room, they just couldn't pull it together. And maybe they thought they had more episodes than they had, so they rushed a little bit of it, but. I mean, it's not like the acting was terrible, and the little pieces of script, when you take them individually, seemed okay. The ideas seemed fine. The look of it seemed fine. It just seemed like if we could look at the editing floor and pick up all the pieces that got dropped and turn it into a show that has more episodes, so you have more time to tell an actually compelling story and also develop the characters better. For gosh sakes,
were we maybe overcrowded?
Too many.
Because I'm thinking about, well, and too many storylines.
Yeah.
Because at this point, Jack's storyline could have been my favorite and was nothing.
Yeah.
That was a throwaway storyline, and it had the potential to be really interesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. His could have been my favorite, too.
To a degree, the same with Tip's, although Tip, some stuff came well out of Tip, but some stuff was really bad. The entire Dorothy Glenda storyline, I hated, but I don't think that was a detailing issue. I think that was just one of those, everyone involved was a shithead, and so I wasn't really invested.
But that's what I mean, they didn't take any time to get you sympathetic with any character.
Well, Dorothy should not have been as unlikable as she was.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
If we could have just stuck with Dorothy the whole way, which is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Dorothy's horrible. But Dorothy's a terrible person. And uninteresting to boot.
And uneven in the portrayal and everything. It's just, didn't make any sense.
Started on Lucas. But whatever.
Well, even their relationship didn't make any sense. Came out of the blue.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the promos of it said stuff like, you know, their love affair was meant to be or whatever. It's like, was it? Did we?
Their love affair was a little hiccup that nobody expected.
I don't know who's watching this show, quote-unquote, shipping these two people and thinking, wow, I'm so glad they got together after the third episode that they're in scenes together.
And the whole thing smacks of, we'll explain this shit in the second season. There's a lot of stuff. Because we completely threw away there was Karen, and there was Jane, and there was Frank, and there was that other guy, and we know almost nothing about him.
Yeah.
I think he's dead now. I think we established that.
Oh, yeah,
but nothing about how or why. And Jane was totally underused.
Yeah.
It's a mess. If it comes back... Trish had me save the series recording. She may watch it if it comes back. I will not. I am done with that show one way or another.
Oh, I'll watch it if it comes back, but I cannot believe it would. Not unless someone thinks...
Nothing ever seems to say. Apparently it did okay in ratings. And so it's hard to tell. It looks like it's expensive as hell. But the whole thing also, to me, smacks of one of those shows that got made and then sold. Which means... You'd have to reestablish a lot of things to do another season.
Now, some people might think that, in a way, the first season borrows a lot from the first two books. And where it ends, you could reasonably say it's done with those two books. And also, you could say, we're not really going to continue on with what Baum wrote after this.
Yeah.
Because what Baum writes after really departs from that. So far that you can't really start with the first two books and take a lot of the stuff, especially the characterization of the wizard, super seriously, and then go on with what Baum wrote. So you start with the first two books, and now you kind of have to go on your own. So it might be someone thinks, okay, now that they got over the part where they were beholden, which of course they weren't, to the first two books, and now they can do their own thing, let's see what they do with that.
Well, but even that, because you talked about a lot of things that match the books, but when we also talked about it, a lot of the major aspects of the entire story were made up.
Yeah.
So, like, in a lot of ways, it still feels to me like we were doing these weird homages to the books, which, as you said, who's that audience for?
Right.
And otherwise, just doing whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah, that, and it's baffling that way.
So
it's
I doubt.
Why even give a nod to the books at all? If, like you said, there's nobody who's going to appreciate that. So, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process was there, and the execution was pretty bad.
Yeah.
So,
which is too bad, because I want to say the acting was good. That might be a lie. Some of the acting was good.
Well, it's serviceable. I mean, nobody...
The production values were marvelous.
Yeah, yeah. I don't...
Well shot. It was great effects. It was wonderful costuming. Wonderful sets, but I don't get it. And and they wasted Ev. Such a mess. And just consistency. Again, in a single scene, a character's motivation would shift arbitrarily.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
It really seemed rushed. Like they didn't have time to really tell the story they wanted to tell. And that's too bad, because I think it could have been pretty fascinating, pretty interesting. I don't know if it was rushed. I don't know if they did shoot something that was like twice as long and said, all right, well, how can we cut this down? And then so they took out all of the most sympathetic scenes with Dorothy, so you wouldn't like her. Well, everyone's sympathetic scenes because you didn't anybody.
Nobody. Sylvie, most sympathetic character. And Sylvie legit turned people to stone.
I just don't.
Like, perfectly innocent people to stone. Still the most sympathetic character.
But you didn't have one scene, like Glinda. There wasn't one scene that showed her in any kind of, in any way that you could understand or relate to her. Every single scene, she was not a person that you're going to like.
The people we spent the most time on character development were Tip and Mistress West. And we did it really poorly because I don't feel anything new about either of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Tip a little bit. With Tip, they tried to hit on some very cool stuff and cover some territory that television doesn't cover. But I didn't feel that they earned it, and it felt just sort of grotesque how they were trying to.
Yes,
I'm like, you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
I agree.
Don't talk about this kind of stuff.
I agree. Because either you're going to do that right, or you just shouldn't do it at all.
Yeah.
Because it's the worse than ignoring something is presenting it in a way that nobody's going to understand sympathize with.
Absolutely. All right, it's slightly early, but we should end it because I'm coughing and sniffling more and more, and I'm going to die. So we don't want that on the air. I think you have to pay if you record it live. I think there's a fine.
Yeah, then I'd have to pay it. On.
Exactly. And I'm not leaving you shit in my will. So.
Okay.
If you'd like to tell us about your experiences listening to someone actually die on a podcast. Don't ask me why this reminded me of this, but we're also still watching Pete Holmes' show Crashing on HBO. Mm. We'll definitely watch it. I love Pete Holmes. It's a little weird because it's based off of his life, but it's set in the here and now with many people playing themselves, and that gets a little weird to me. I have some trouble with that. But it's still funny. It's still worth watching, and we're enjoying it, so... anyway, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us how you felt about Emerald City or why you want us to shut up about it. Also, what world have you built and what difficulty do you find in writing stories there? Also, does it count as vivisection? I guess we'll find out. also, like us on Facebook. Write the hat, please write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, because we need more stuff there. And, I mean, I guess while you're waiting for next week, I was thinking about this, somebody look and see what Scott Baio's doing now, since, like, the election.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.